And we're back with part two of, I guess we'll call it our books series. Sure. I don't know. We're going to continue discussing our favorite books, what we're reading. We're going to talk a little bit about success and a few different topics. So hope you enjoy. Let's dive right in. What else you got?
But my question would be is then what would you define success as in your view?
Success in my eyes is essentially being able to do whatever you want, whenever you want, whatever makes you happy.
Yeah.
And that obviously includes money and includes having friends and includes having family, all of that encompassed in being able to do whatever. Like, I feel like I would succeed whenever I can fly to California tomorrow. I can go have nice dinners. I can take my family with, and I don't even have to look at my bank account to be like, oh crap, can I afford all this?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I
would still encompass though, like just traveling. Like, I mean, that's my thing that I freaking love.
Yeah.
Whether it's solo or groups or whatever, like that's my thing that I thoroughly enjoy.
Yeah. Cause you're what? 2 states away from traveling?
Seven.
7 states away from hitting all 50.
Seven. Yeah.
Before 30, right? That's the goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you got 2 years.
Gotta knock a couple out this year.
Yeah, though. You need to get going.
I know.
Oh, Texas.
Might have to go to
El Paso right now.
Oh, Texas is easy. I've already been to Texas.
Oh, that's right. I'm in New Mexico. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do need to go to New Mexico, Arizona.
I said El Paso like it was in Texas. Yeah. Oh, it is.
El Paso is in Texas.
I'm an idiot. Yeah. I don't know what I'm thinking right now.
The weird thing about New Mexico is, like, south of Albuquerque, there's literally nothing. It's literally dirt.
Right.
So I have to go to Albuquerque for that. Then there's Arizona. There's Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, Hawaii. So there's eight more.
Those are some good states on that list.
Yeah, there's some solid ones. Outside of New Mexico, that one sucks.
Yeah, that's about the worst one I heard.
Yeah, which I'll just hit that on the way back from Phoenix or something.
Mm.
Which technically I have been to Arizona. We drove in it that one day.
We drove through it.
Yeah. But the criteria is I have to stay a night there for it to count.
Yep. 24 hours.
Yeah.
That's a good criteria.
Yep. So
I would definitely agree with you on the success of what I define success in as far as like money goes. But I look at my dad's life. And I define that as success. And he does not have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's because they, so my parents live actually in an apartment right now. Just because the housing market, having 4 kids, you know, like they just have decided to save up some money.
Yeah.
And my dad's just turned 64. And so that to them was a huge shift, and they've been in this apartment, I think, for almost three years now. That was a huge shift for them because they love to work in the yard. They love to, work on the house. They love home ownership.
Yeah.
But seeing them take their current situation and being happy in it, to me has changed my perspective on what success is. Being happy with and content in your current situation. Not saying that you don't strive for more and go for more, but if you're just happy with where you're at in life, I find that pretty successful in my opinion.
Yeah, there's that reminded me of Ed Milet always says, be blissfully discontent.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're happy in the moment of what you have and everything you've accomplished and all of that, but at the same time, you're not satisfied.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that give and take where, like, because the problem is if you're only discontent with where you are, you're unhappy.
Guaranteed. Exactly. Yeah.
Guaranteed. So,
and you can be, and it's obvious, you can be unhappy having everything.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Because you're always comparing yourself maybe to the next big thing.
Yep.
And there's always going to be a next big thing.
Yeah.
And so, if that's what you're constantly pursuing, the next big thing, then you're never going to be able to celebrate the victories that you have been able to accomplish.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like I've always had this thought that, like, we're put on this earth, and then I feel like at the end of your life, in my mind, at least, this is the way that I like imagine things, is
you That's go, scary.
You go to heaven and you're like at the door and or whatever. But say we're at a door.
I'm just having fun picturing this with you.
Yeah, so we're at a door and you open it and there's God, and in my mind I see of like a starting point of whenever you were born, and then I feel like God has an endpoint of where you could be or should be at the end of your life.
Mm.
And there's like some form of a comparison, whether that, like, I'm not saying that that's whether you go to heaven or hell. Mm. I'm just saying that I feel like there's some kind of a comparison of like, this is everything you could have been, and here's where you ended.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I want those to align.
I mean, honestly, it's funny. Like, I think of it the same way.
Nice. So I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. I've thought of it the same way, whether or not that's true or not.
Yeah. Like, it's one of those, like, I have no idea if it's like true or that even happened.
But obviously, we have free will, exactly. Right? So in our free will, we have the choice to be able to determine where we want to go in life.
Yes.
But at the same time, God knows the beginning and the end.
Exactly.
Right?
He's got a plan. That's what always like draws you back to it is like, he's not just going to put, like, God's not going to put you on this earth and just like, have at it. Like, good luck. Yeah. See you later.
Yeah.
Like, there's obviously a plan that he has, and like, there's a potential that you have, which if people ever meet it, I don't know. Maybe
mm-hmm.
not.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still some form of a plan, and I want that to align with what that end plan was whenever I was born.
Yeah. Whether or not this is right or not, but the way I think about it is sometimes like you have that series of doors in front of you. You pick one door, you go through that door, and then you have a new series of doors. And so what I mean by that is you chose to make this decision, which resulted in this outcome with that could potentially have more outcomes based on the next decision that you make.
Exactly.
And so that's the free will. We have the decision of which way we want to go, but ultimately the Lord knows what's behind that door
exactly.
of where you're going.
And that's what's crazy. So that's why we actually theoretically don't know what's good and bad in the moment.
Mm.
Like, you could lose your job tomorrow. But something
could be a blessing.
But that building that you worked at might get blown up tomorrow or something. You're like, well, thank God I don't work there anymore.
Yeah.
Or whatever. You know, like, there's a million situations, but you really don't know what's good or bad in the moment. It might feel terrible.
I honestly even say that when I'm driving. Like, if I miss a turn or miss an exit and I have to drive out of my way, I'm like, well, maybe I missed a wreck that I didn't know
exactly.
about.
Exactly. It's like, man, that's bad. That sucks. I'm going to be late. But what happens if there's a huge wreck that you literally just
could have,
like,
could have, would have. Yeah, exactly.
So that's a weird, I forget what that's called. There's some like philosophical name for not knowing what's good and bad in the moment. I forget what it's called though.
A conundrum.
Sure. I'll go with that.
So, this is about as deep as my mind goes.
There it is.
All right. Well, what about you? What's your book that
has never made it to my...
Yeah, we never made it. I'm trying to circle back there.
Yeah, nice. My favorite book. So I'll do two. My first one is... I'll do one fiction and one nonfiction.
Okay.
The fiction one is A Walk to Remember. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Greatest book. Great movie. Book's better. But it's really good because it shows how people can be a freaking degenerate, or for lack of a better term, a shithead, and change their life around and do things for the better.
Mm-hmm.
There's always room for somebody to change. And that movie's extremely sad. If you watch that movie for the first time, you don't cry, you don't have a heart.
I think I have seen it, but it has been, I don't even remember anything about that book.
Guess what we're doing tonight?
Movie.
You're going to be crying.
Well,
it's such a freaking good
movie. I heard there's a Game 7 hockey game that I'd rather watch.
That is true. But yeah, the movie, Mandy Moore plays in it. Queen.
I don't know who that is.
Oh my goodness. I got to teach you everything.
Bro, this movie is so old.
Dude, it's so good. And the soundtrack, fire. If you don't think that's on my Spotify, you are crazy. Absolutely crazy.
All right.
Anyway,
so it's a story. It's a story of what again?
It's a story about basically a kid who's like the popular kid, and he's going to parties. He's doing all this stupid stuff, and then he basically meets this girl, and it just kind of changes his life because of the circumstances in which she's in that he doesn't really find out until the end, which I'm not going to spoil it, obviously. But Yeah, and then it just progresses through where, like, he starts doing things that he never would have done before because they weren't, quote, cool.
Yeah.
He gets involved with that kind of stuff. He starts studying. He starts doing better in school.
Mm-hmm.
He stops, like, bullying people and things like that. So, like, it's just a story of, like, a guy who's just basically a terrible person and mm-hmm. is transformed into basically a good person.
Gotcha. Okay. So, yeah. All right. So then what's the nonfiction?
Phenomenal book. Phenomenal. I can't say it enough.
That's my favorite word to say is phenomenal.
Phenomenal. It's a great word. Second book is The Art of War.
Okay. Great book. It's
by Sun Tzu back in who knows when?
Long time ago.
Yeah, long time ago. It's actually, the original version is very big. It's like 1,100 or 1,200 pages probably.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of condensed versions though now that are just kind of like picture books and kind of quick.
My favorite.
Like, they're probably 200-300 pages and you can read them fairly quickly.
Yeah.
I like to take that book and apply it not only to life, but mainly to business.
Which is what it's, I feel like in today's world, it's actually designed.
That's
to
what
do.
It's been transformed into. Yeah. Originally, it was actually like a code for war. Like mm-hmm. it was what you would use. Like a World War One general would be very familiar with that book because of the strategy behind it of like basically knowing your battles. Which mm-hmm. battles should you fight? Which ones should you not? Knowing your enemies. Always being deceptive. So basically looking weak when you're strong, looking strong when you're weak, things like that. There's a lot of great points in that book that
you said you translate it into business. What would the deceptive part, how would that translate into like a business type setting, I guess?
I think in like, you could in negotiations say,
mm-hmm.
With like other companies and stuff. Otherwise, like it's more of like, I would say a branding play of like, if you have a competitor that's coming into the market and they just created some product that's exactly like yours, at that moment, you want to look weak. If you're strong, like if you're a strong company, you want to look weak to them. And they think, oh, well, here's three gaps. Their marketing sucks. They don't have social media and their product is inferior in this category. Mm-hmm. You want them to think that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the background, you're prepared for that. You know that they're looking at it saying, here's three areas where we're not as good, but here's what we're doing to solve them. So you're already ahead of them, changing them, becoming a better product, marketing, social media, whatever, and inevitably beating them. So it's not necessarily like being deceptive in a sense of like, being a publicly traded company and saying that your numbers suck and we have no margin and just lying on all of that.
Yeah.
It's more so on like to your competitors. So like Vrbo and Airbnb is an example. Like as Airbnb, you want to look inferior or show weakness in a sense of, or to Vrbo in whatever, whether it's the app or the functionality or whatever.
Would it also look like, if you're a startup new company that's trying to take on a mega that's already been established?
Yep. So in that case, you look weak.
Mm-hmm.
You start
automatically because you're obviously not
yep.
as big of a company.
But like in that example, you're weak, but your biggest advantage is that you can be agile, whereas the big company can't. Ooh,
you know what that makes me think about is the company Whoop. Have you heard of Whoop?
Yeah, the sports band.
Yeah, so they're a sports band that monitors your health and like circadian rhythms and everything. And I don't know how long they've been in business, but it's not been long. It's maybe been 4 or 5 years. And when they first started their business, Amazon tried to make a replica of their business.
2 or 3 years ago.
And in fact, Whoop actually pitched to Amazon for Amazon to be an investor into the company. And what they didn't know during that pitch is that Amazon was just taking the information that they were telling them and they went and created their own. And then fast forward to today, Amazon actually quit manufacturing their version of the Whoop because Whoop was so superior and agile and able to pivot.
Exactly.
To where they actually won.
Which they could, so strategically looking at that, Whoop could be deceptive in a sense that they acted like they had no idea that Amazon would ever come in and take all their information and make their own. They may have appeared that way, but they may have known all along, like, hey, Amazon, they just want to know how they can replicate this. If you go into it knowing that,
yeah,
then that's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, whether they did or not, who knows? But it's just an example of...
Well, and it's a deceptive in the sense of, too, is that they're a smaller company. At the time, they were looking for an investor, obviously. So Amazon thinks that they're and they're amazingly multi-billion dollar company.
Yeah,
they think that it's going to be easy. So they're being deceptive in the sense of them saying, like, we're small, but because we know what we're doing, this is why we're better than you all. And it proved so. And I think that's a really cool story of, like, David and Goliath, honestly, in a business setting.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two other points, my two favorite ones.
Okay.
First one, opportunities multiply as they are seized.
Mm.
That's a really big one.
Okay.
It's kind of basically just momentum.
Right.
Like, once you've won that first battle, pounce on them.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've gotten that first traction with your business, double down, triple down, accelerate it. So that's a big one. And then the final one is preparation is the precursor to success.
Mm, for sure.
That's a big one.
It's a big one.
In that book, it's basically prepare your army. Like, basically, you win the battle before you even step on the battleground.
Yep.
Essentially, preparing your people, training, all of that kind of stuff is what wins the battle, in the game.
And that's what, I mean, you see the military still practice that so much today.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times we did the same exercise over and over over to the point where, like, you want to just crawl in a hole and die because you're tired of doing the same thing over and over. But they do that because, obviously, when you're put in a situation that's life and death, they want it to be so drilled into you that your body just does it.
Exactly.
Even when you know that you're going to be scared or whatever in a situation, your body knows exactly what to do.
Yep.
So, like, for example, I did training with the Louisville SWAT team. I went through their SWAT school. And we shot for, I think, 6-7 hours practicing the same drill where our gun would malfunction. Our primary weapon, our M4, whatever we were shooting, would go down, quote unquote, and we would have to transition to our pistol and go two to the chest, one to the head. And we did that, I kid you not, for that same freaking drill. And I, like, where my shooting finger, my index finger, was going raw because that we were shooting so much. I was like, I didn't even want to shoot ever again. After that day, like, I'm tired of shooting, I don't want to shoot. But then we woke up the next day, what did we start with? Transitioning drills. And so you see that in the military still because of that situation of life or death, but then it can translate into the business setting of, for example, you could leave a job for maybe 8 months to a year, whatever, and then start and do the same job at a different company. Because you did it so much over and over and over, now it's innate in you to where you can just hop into a new job and just roll with it.
Exactly. Now, I mean, obviously I don't have military experience, but I always relate that one to sports.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, that's
basketball
a good one
is a good, I mean, any sport, obviously, but, like, basketball is a good one. Like, you shoot over and over and over and over and over, and then you get in the game and, like, Steph Curry's not wondering, like, is my arm positioned correctly?
Yeah.
Is my hand on the ball correctly? Like, it's just a shot.
Yep.
Like, it's a second nature and this is done.
What did Michael Jordan say? Like, it's like 10,000 hours or 10,000 shots before I'm become great at it.
Yeah, 10,000 hours was Malcolm Gladwell.
Man, I was way off.
That term. But, I mean, Michael Jordan probably said it.
Yeah.
But, Malcolm Gladwell in the book The Outliers.
Yeah, okay.
Coined that. I actually don't know if that's the first place I ever saw it,
yeah.
And he's credited with a lot. But, yeah, 10,000 hours of any skill to be a master of it, essentially, which obviously 10,000 hours is a long time.
Yep.
So,
yeah. Yeah. And in the military, we call those subject matter experts. Is somebody who just knew it like the back of their hand.
Yeah.
And those were the people that I honestly respected the most, because that takes the most dedication to get to that point.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing just literally over and over and over and over.
You know, I actually, this might be completely wrong, but I think this is correct. So Sun Tzu's name, it's either the sun or the Tzu means master. And the other word is their name. So it's like Master Tzu or Sun Master. I'm not sure which one it is. Because if you look, basically every philosopher that was in like China was basically the same name. I'm pretty sure it was Tzu.
I'm not sure.
I think they all end in Tzu. And it means master. Like they're actually named. It's like putting Mr. Haddon or something. But that's a random thing that popped in my head. But yeah.
We'll roll with it.
Nice. All right, what do we got next? Lost my notes. Hey, how are you? Is that all we got?
I don't know.
If you write a book, what book would you write?
Ooh.
Do it to him, Haddon. Hendo season.
Why don't you answer this question first?
Write a book. That's a good question. Honestly, I get asked this a fair amount.
Yeah.
And I never know a good answer. If I could just, not based on my skills or anything, write a book, I would write a fiction book. And I don't know if it would be like kind of based on my life in a sense and make like a story out of it, or if it would just be completely fiction. But given my skill set, it's probably not that great. If I had to write a book literally today, it would probably be some form of integrating like an autobiography of going from a freaking degenerate through basically the end of high school, early college, to turning that around and somehow making, I'll call it something out of it. I would say the transformation of, because I always say it, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And
right.
Freaking true. So it would probably be something.
You can make that a fiction book though.
I could, but the problem is I don't have the skill set. Like, yeah, like I can't imagine, like, for instance, I can't look at this room and say, I'm going to put this on the wall. I'm going to put that on, over there. I'm going to put this here. And I know exactly what it's going to look at or look like at the end. I have no clue. Where, like, fiction, like, you have to be able to visualize what the story is going to be, the progression. You have to know where it's going to end in order to even start it.
So you wouldn't say, you wouldn't describe yourself as a visionary?
No, I'm a freaking numbers guy.
Yeah.
I'm numbers and code. I'm not like a visual person really.
I would not have described myself as a visionary last year. One of the things that I told somebody, shout out Ike, when I was
good guy
first starting the company. Was that I? One of my biggest fears was is that I struggle with being a visionary, and the way I explained it and told him was because I was in the military for 11 years, and I had never had to think outside of what I was told.
Doing yeah,
I just was like always told, "Hey, do this, shut up and color and do it," you know. And so the military doesn't make you explore or wonder or innovate, because there's a standard way of doing everything.
Yeah.
And so when I told him that I was fearful of starting the companies because what if I'm not able to keep up? What if I'm not able to see 3 months down the road, see 6 months down the road, whatever. And that's something that is a skill that I think can be developed when your back is against the wall and you have people that you have to care for, because it's forcing you to think outside the box.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And
but in a story setting, that is different, though.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think, like, because visionary, I think, is different than, like, being visual.
For sure.
If that makes sense. Where, like, visionary, I would agree.
Well, visionary is like, imaginative visuals that you're actually seeing it.
Yeah, like a visual. I'm thinking of, like, painting a picture, though. Like, I would say my artistic ability in terms of drawing, coloring, writing, whatever, is not high.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I would struggle with probably writing any book, honestly, but mm-hmm. especially a fiction book.
Yeah.
My imagination for that kind of stuff is not high.
Which makes me think of, because we're talking about fiction, another good book is The Silent Patient.
Oh, dude. That needs to be a movie immediately. Whoever wrote that book, I forget what they're called or their name's called. Their name is, I can't speak English. I got too excited for that book. That book is so freaking good.
That's another great book like you're like, how do you think of
that's what I'm this? Saying. Exactly.
I think that's why I like fiction books, because that's just an untapped space in my brain.
Yeah.
That I'm very admire of writers.
I was about to say, my appreciation for it is like so high. Even the same for movies.
Yeah.
Like for Sean, for example, like I couldn't imagine sitting down and for one, writing a script of a movie or even beginning to know where to start to like actually make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
I, my mind does not work that way. Where it's like a skill. I would have no clue where like,
yeah,
what it would even look like. Mine would be a freaking chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you did write a book and you were forced to write one, obviously you'd want to write a fiction book if you could. But
if I could, it would be, if I had to write a book right now, it would be what I said earlier about basically going from a degenerate to somewhat of something.
Not a degenerate?
Yeah, like not a degenerate, but like, I don't know. I feel like my story is kind of weird.
Yeah.
In a sense of like from lawn care company to college to corporate world, switching through corporate world. Like I think there's life experiences in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also incorporate something along the lines of like remote work and being able to travel.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've always lived first and worked second. And I think so many people don't do that.
That's true.
Like, there's so many people that always DM me. Like, if I put a story of, like, oh, I'm traveling in Denver now or whatever, then people are always like, man, I wish I could do that. And my response every freaking time, and every single person who's ever DM me can vouch for that, I say, then do it.
Yeah.
You know, like, if that's really something you really want, then do it.
Right.
But I really don't think most people really, really want that. No, or maybe they don't know like the steps, or they haven't looked into how to do it.
Yeah.
But I think it could be a fairly interesting book of like, how do you structure your work in order to live the life that you want to live?
Mm-hmm.
Because like, if I'm unhappy in my job, and you know this, I've been unhappy twice in my job and I quit both times.
Mm-hmm.
Like I will go to the next job every single time. If I wake up for like, I'm not one day, one bad day, and I'm out. But like, if I'm like 3 or 4 months in and every single day has just been,
you're burned out,
either boring or I just don't like anymore, I don't agree with what they're doing or whatever, like I'm out.
Yeah.
I'll go find something else. I don't care.
In the same way.
I mean, because my thing is I've always looked at it. I can, at a very minimum, always go back and cut grass tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can start that up literally tomorrow, and worst case scenario, that's what I do.
Yeah.
Not ideal, but like,
yeah,
I know that I can do that as like a plan B if I had to have one.
Exactly. I think along with that, what you're saying though too, is I hate complaining.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people just enjoy complaining for some reason.
I would agree. They don't truly hate their job. They just want something else to complain
about. They want somebody to pity them.
Yeah.
And I've always been the type of person, well, if you're going to talk about it, be about it. And I feel like for the vast majority of my life, I have backed that up. Mm-hmm. Even if it's something that I know is going to be extremely difficult, because I was so adamant about it, I still did it.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why I joined the military, to be honest, because I got called out and I said, I'm going to do this.
Nice.
And that's been it, but I also love to test myself as well. And I will complain sometimes. So I would always say this in the military. I will complain my butt off, but I will be the hardest worker out there.
Yeah.
And it's because I don't like to be lackadaisical in anything that I do. I like to give it full effort and everything.
Yeah.
And so, but when I heard people complaining, I would just be like, shut up and just do the work. Like, I'm very direct that way.
Yeah.
And then if I hear them continue to complain, I'm like, either you need to do something in your life to change it or you need to shut up.
Exactly.
And
I might start using that.
Yeah. And I mean, and to your point, people DMing you like, oh man, I wish I could do that. It's just like, I'll listen to you for a couple of times, but after that, continue to choose not to, I'm not going to waste my time on you and trying to give you words of encouragement because it's going in one ear and out the other.
Exactly. It's literally figured out.
Yeah.
I mean, the not liking your job is the craziest one to me. Like, for the love of God, if you don't like your job, go find something else. I will never understand that.
Yeah.
Like, if you truly hate your job and you hate waking up every single day to go to your job, why on earth would you not go do something else?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
And I guarantee you, if you don't like your job and you quit, and even if you don't have a backup plan, your back's going to be against the wall to provide for yourself, that you're going to find something.
Yeah. I mean, and I say that, like, I wouldn't say be crazy and like just quit your job on the spot and then struggle for 3-6 months or something. Like, line something up, like, have a plan and strategically say, okay, I'm completely done with this job. I'm applying to jobs for the next 3 months and I'm finding my way out of here. Like, you have to have a plan and you have to figure things out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm always for find something else. Like, I would literally take a pay cut tomorrow if I hated my job, and I would take a pay cut tomorrow for something that I thought in the moment would be a good decision.
Yeah. It always goes back to, like, people will stay in a dead-end job because of the money that they're receiving instead of sacrificing their happiness.
And that's the corporate rattle.
Yeah.
The rat race. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's literally what corporate world's designed for.
Right.
They want enough perks, like enough health benefits, enough pay, just enough to keep you there. That's it.
Yeah, moral of the story is don't go corporate.
Honestly, like, I said that my entire life, and I'm not fully against corporate. I do think you have to find the right corporation, the right job, the right role, the right people to be around. There are good corporations.
Yeah.
And the main reason I say that is because the large majority of people are cut out to be corporate employees.
The large majority, yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very small percentage that are legit entrepreneurs, and, like, they want to start a company or they should start a company, and they do. That's a very small percentage. So, like, I'm not fully against – that's why I'm not fully against college. Like, I think there's places where college is definitely not needed, and there's a lot of people that get degrees that are so stupid and just a waste of money. But I do think that's a track of, like, go to high school, go to college, get a corporate job. I think that's a large majority. Whether that's indoctrinated in our society or not, that's a whole other conspiracy. But
yeah, we can talk about that on a later day.
That's another day.
There's always pros and cons to it. Like, just like there's pros and cons to starting your own career or staying in corporate. There's a lot of pros and cons. But I do think that to be an entrepreneur, you need a lot of grit. And a lot of people think that they may have grit, but they don't know what actual real grit is.
Yeah, because I can assure you, owning a business is way more work, guaranteed.
It's way more work, way more responsibility, and
just risk.
Just a lot of risk.
Yeah, there's way more risk too, yeah.
Yeah. And
I say that, but dude, there's risk in corporations too now, because there's no loyalty is the problem. But,
yeah,
you know, there's inherently more in a startup.
Yeah, because if it doesn't work, then you know you invested your own money into the company to get it started, so your savings is already dwindled, and then if it fails, it's not like you were taking months to apply for other jobs because you were trying to keep going. So then you're out your money, didn't have time to find a job, and then it didn't work. So then you have nothing in trying to find a job.
Yeah, and that's sadly the large majority of startups is the problem. And that's what makes it risky, obviously.
Right. Yeah. But again, you can't, to me, I don't know if you can.
You only live once,
brother. This is debatable, but I don't think you can teach grit. I think grit in a large way is very innate in who you are, and it starts, I guess you can teach it in the sense of, like, from your parenting, and if you saw it at a young age from your parents and experienced it with your parents.
Yeah, I think it's, I was looking this book up. Angela Duckworth would beg to differ. She wrote a book called Grit. But I would kind of agree to the sense of, like, there's people that are born with way more grit than others. I think there's a certain, like, capacity that you can extend it. Like, for example, like, maybe you were born being a very good public speaker, and maybe I was born and I sucked. I could probably get a little better at that.
That's not grit to me, though.
I think grit is. Like, it can be learned.
But, no, I'm saying that's not grit.
What is grit, then?
You're saying that I'm good at public speaking and you're not. You can learn that. That's a skill.
So is grit.
No, grit is putting your nose to the ground and freaking hustling.
Exactly. Determination. You can learn it.
You can learn
it. Same as you can learn to, like, have the discipline to go to the gym.
Yeah.
It's inherently grit. It's at a very more lackadaisical version of it.
I think if grit is when you're at your breaking point and you, from the outside world, everybody thinks that you have no way of getting out, no way of succeeding, no way of finishing, but yet you dig deep to that, not the second level, but the basement of who you are, and find that capacity to keep going.
Yeah.
I think of grit that way.
Googling, it's the definition of grit is courage and resolve, strength of character.
Yeah, so learning a skill like public speaking, I don't think is grit.
Possibly.
I think of grit, again, because I'm biased because of the military, but I think of grit more being beyond physical, but mental.
Yeah.
Because you're testing not only your body and how far your body can go, but your mindset and what you're really made of.
But that, so that's kind of my point, is you can learn mental toughness by continuing to push yourself and push yourself. Your mental toughness becomes stronger. Mm-hmm. Inherently, your grit and or your courage, basically the same word, essentially, can be improved.
Yeah, I just think public speaking is not that.
No, I mean, maybe that's not a great example. I mean, maybe a better example is, I mean, really it's discipline in a sense. It's a step further than discipline.
Yeah, it's
just, and I feel like you can develop this.
Because I think a business, a very successful, like, okay, Jeff Bezos, for example, like, King. Dollar sign wise, yes. I think he can be somebody as described as obviously a hard worker, entrepreneur. I don't know, man. I think of, like, okay, grit is if this is an extreme example, but if a gun was pointed at you, your real character is going to come out and who you are. That's mm-hmm. what I think of it.
That's part of it, is good character. But that's the question, is can character be developed? Which I would say yes.
Yes. Yeah, it has to be, because that's the importance of the home. That's the importance of your parenting and growing up. Like, your character is extremely shaped by who you're with. Yeah. And this is another conversation for a later date, but that's why the not assigning a gender at an early age and having an open home is threatful.
Yeah.
Because you're still indoctrinating and shaping that person's character, whether you think you are or not.
Yeah.
And so yes, all of those things can be taught. It's just that I just think that our society doesn't have a real definition of grit anymore, I guess.
Yeah.
They may think that they
are. I would
are.
Agree.
Because I'm thinking, again, I have that very...
I wonder if every generation has saw that. That's what I always come back to.
I agree, for sure. But I have that mindset of war. Like, that's just innate in me.
Yeah.
And I think about, okay, if we got attacked today and World War III was happening on our homeland, you're going to really know who
we'd be screwed.
People are at that point. You're going to really know who you are.
Yeah.
You can talk smack and be somebody in whatever setting that you put yourself in, mm-hmm. but you're really going to know who you are at that point.
Yeah.
And obviously we all can't be tested that way. That's mm-hmm. unrealistic. But I feel like I have.
Yeah.
You know, and so in my mind, I know that I can keep going when others may think I can't keep going.
Yeah. That's fair. I love it.
That's my definition of grit.
I love it. Screw you, Google. Screw you. Oh, man. All right. Well, I have to go eat.
Yeah, I need to eat too. What are you making me tonight?
I have chicken. Chicken and some Brussels sprouts.
We said our place is like startup vibes, so is our food. Oh,
pass. Yeah. You're about to make me some of that tortellini, and then we can put some of that chicken in it, and then we'll eat some Brussels sprouts with it. We're about to watch Air. We will keep you updated on that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Actually, no, we're watching a hockey game.
And we're out!
And we're out.